When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The information depicted in this podcast is purely for informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional before making any changes to your lifestyle or routine.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas and I am the founder of Ergogenic Health. Together in this podcast series, we will go underground to explore cutting-edge health and human performance insights that you simply cannot search on Google to help you upgrade your existence. So without any further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Alrighty, welcome everyone to yet another episode of the Boost Your Biology podcast. Today I'm joined in with Jessie, also known as the Glucose Goddess, and in fact probably one of the very first profiles to really be monitoring and tracking blood sugar with a CGM device. And I remember coming across her profile and I was, you know, captivated by some of the data and some of the things that she was tracking, and I was, you know, really caught my interest. And I know even in the last, you know, 3 to 4 months, your page in general has just really taken off, which is amazing. So Jessie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lucas. And I just want to say, you know, you were one of the first people to follow and support me, like back maybe, okay, not that long ago, maybe like a year ago. I remember getting a message from you and I probably had, you know, 3,000 followers back then. And you were like, Jessie, I love your page. I can't wait to see your account grow. And already then, you know, having 3,000 followers was way beyond anything I had ever imagined. And now looking back, it was really just the beginning. So thank you for your support from the beginning. It means a lot.
Yeah, no worries. So do you want to maybe like give my listeners a bit of a background into how you got into, like, I guess, the CGM space?
Totally. It's kind of an interesting circuitous route. So I would say my journey into health started when I was 19. I was on vacation with some friends in Hawaii and we went to the jungle and we thought, hey, wouldn't it be a great idea to jump off this waterfall? And I said, yes, for sure. So I jump off the waterfall, but in midair, I sort of freak out and I forget I need to land with my legs really straight. So I land on my tailbone and the pressure from the water creates this shock wave in my spine and explodes one of my vertebrae. So I broke my back in this waterfall doing something fun with my friends. And from then on, I'll spare you the details, but it was just a lot of like physical rehab after I had a really intense surgery. And then a lot of mental health issues came up for me. I was very confused about life. I really wanted to understand my body and how to take care of it. And at that very young age, I realized so incredibly deeply that health is the most important thing we have. You know, without physical and mental health, you have nothing. And to be 19 and to go from very naive teenager to knowing this very intimately and very deeply just set me up for this path of working in the health space and trying to reconnect with my body. So anyway, then I went to school to study biochemistry. Then I worked in a genetics startup for 4 years, and I ended up testing a glucose monitor maybe 2.5 years ago, sort of randomly. And when I put this little device on that shows me the levels of my glucose within my body every 5 minutes, it just clicked for me. I was like, my God, this is the most useful and incredibly insightful device I've ever worn. Now, every time I eat something, within minutes, I get feedback from the inside of my body, which was like the holy grail for me. I wanted to talk with the inside of my body. So I get feedback from within. I mean, this is crazy. I get feedback from within on my phone regarding whether my body essentially liked or didn't like what I just ate. And it just fascinated me. I thought, wow, it's amazing. All of a sudden, I don't have to listen to opinions anymore about how to eat or what to do to be healthy. I can get data straight from under my skin constantly and figure out how to optimize what I'm doing to feel and be as healthy as I can. So that's the story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating, really, now that we have like the tools as we're truly biohacking. That's what we're doing. I think it's a bit of a gift that we have that sort of technology. And now that we can, you know, having that autonomy and that we feel empowered now that we have the data so we can use it and run experiments on ourselves. And I'm sure you've done many yourself, like with certain foods, and you posted your data and stuff like that. So do you want to maybe talk about, I guess, some of the, some things that really shocked you, like when you were tracking things?
Sure. So when I first started putting a glucose monitor on, I was a little bit confused. So for example, if I had, you know, nachos on Monday, I would see a big glucose spike afterwards in my bloodstream. And then if I had the same nachos on Sunday, my glucose would be completely steady. So, and I would see this with a lot of different foods. I would see that depending on when I ate them, the response would vary significantly. And at the beginning, I was just taken aback by that. It was a little bit weird to understand. And then I realized it's not just about what you eat. A lot of things influence how your body responds to carbohydrates. And it can be how much you just exercised, how well you slept the night before, what you currently have in your stomach, in which order you ate the food on your plate. So I would say there was a big lump of just confusion and awe when I realized it's not just about the exact thing you're eating. It's about everything else going on. So that was one thing. And then maybe to date, my most surprising and a little bit annoying experiment was when I did with my ex-boyfriend. So I love cookies. Like, I love chocolate chip cookies, and I grew up eating them. So when I eat cookies, of course, cookies have a lot of starch and they have a lot of sugar. So that starch and that sugar, as you digest it and it goes through your system, it ends up in your blood and it spikes your glucose really high. And you want to avoid these really high spikes, right? So I eat the cookies, big spike. My ex-boyfriend was also wearing a glucose monitor. And when he ate the cookies, dude, I kid you not, just the flattest curve ever. And I was like, okay, maybe there's something going on today. We redid the experiment 3 times. And every time for him, the response was completely flat. And for me, it was like, so individual differences are a real thing. There's a lot of science out there that's trying to figure out why do we respond differently to the same food. And it has to do with just your physiological state, maybe your microbiome, maybe your genetics. So that's a really surprising thing that I found. For me, cookies are not a good option, but for him, they're a good option if he wants to eat something sweet.
Yeah. So maybe for the listeners, let's sort of talk about some of the symptoms that you might experience when you're in either like a hyperglycemic or a hypoglycemic state. Because I know personally, like when I, let's say 3 hours after a super high carb meal, let's say I've had like massive bowl of white rice with some veggies, and like a few hours later, I might notice that dip. And for me, the symptoms are like a bit of brain fog, maybe a little bit of blurry vision, a bit more fatigued. What are the symptoms like for you? Like, do you experience that when you're in hypo?
I do for sure. For me, the biggest and most difficult to deal with symptom is if I'm fasting. So I'm super hungry and I haven't eaten for a while. Then I eat something high in sugar. And as my glucose levels are spiking up, I just feel like it feels like a migraine. It feels like really intense brain fog for me. And for years, I didn't know what that was. And I was just like, whoa, I really don't feel well. I felt a little bit disconnected from reality. I was like, what's happening? And now I know that it's when my glucose is just shooting through the roof that my brain, it's almost like it's an altered state of consciousness, not a nice one. I just feel like shit. So for me, the hyper is really disagréable. It's not nice at all. And then as my glucose comes back down after a big spike, I experience some of the usual stuff like feeling hungry, having cravings for sweet things, and feeling tired. Yeah.
Mm. So do you notice, in terms of like certain meals and things like that, do you notice any, cause I know a lot of listeners will be curious to know like how protein, let's say a lean piece of chicken or red meat or fish, like, does that have any, obviously it contains no glucose, but does it still have a little, you know, spike on blood sugar?
That's a really good question. So yes, proteins don't contain any carbohydrates per se. So technically, you know, nothing that should turn into glucose. However, when you eat large amounts of protein, some of it gets converted to glucose. And this is especially true if you're like on a ketogenic diet. That's why it's really important when you're doing keto to make sure that you're not eating too much protein, because otherwise some of it will be converted to glucose. But generally, like protein in and of itself, even if it converts to glucose at a small rate, will still do so way less than any carb you could ever eat.
Yeah, of course.
What's your experience with that?
Well, I've only ever had access to like a regular, like a pricker, a finger pricker, a singular glucose monitoring device. I wish I had access to a CGM. I'd literally be wearing it every day and just doing experiments all the time with certain supplements. And I know there's been a few times where I've encouraged you to test out like cinnamon and apple cider vinegar and things like that. I've been playing around with a few, like they're called like glucose disposal agents. So things that can basically like bitter melon, cinnamon, and other things that can help to increase like peripheral insulin sensitivity and things like that. So in terms of like my own experiments, I think just like, if I eat a really high carbohydrate meal on its own without any fiber, fats or protein, then I do notice a dip. For me, it comes like 2 hours later, I notice that dip. But there are so many factors, like you mentioned, in terms of things that affect that response. So like post-workout, it's a different story. If I have... Like if you're going to train super hard and then post-workout, I can tolerate like a super high carb meal fine. No dramas.
I have to tell you a story. Yesterday I did something incredible. And right now, unfortunately, my phone is filming, so I can't show you on my phone. But I think I did the most successful pasta eating a moment in my life. So I love pasta and I love eating like massive bowls of it. And yesterday, I think I did the perfect sequencing so that the pasta didn't spike my glucose at all. So I had a bowl with two soft-boiled eggs and some cabbage, okay? And then half an hour later, I had this massive bowl of pasta. So first of all, making sure that you eat fiber and protein before you eat carbs really helps reduce a glucose spike. But then about 45 minutes after eating the pasta, I got on my bike and I did 30 minutes of super intense, you know, interval training. And Lucas, my glucose was completely flat. Like the pasta didn't even register. I was so happy.
there have been some studies where they compared, 15 minutes of post-meal walking, that three sessions of like 3 by 15 minute post-meal walks is equally, if not more effective than the anti-diabetic drug metformin, which is pretty amazing. And I actually got myself a walking treadmill desk during lockdown. it's literally been the best thing I ever got. Cause like, I just feel like it's in terms of keeping that stability and like there's so many other benefits to just walking and getting the steps in from like a creativity point of view, mood and BDNF and things like that. So yeah, definitely. I definitely encourage people to do that post meal. If you're going to have a cheat meal, let's say you have a cheat meal, like what can you do to offset it? Well, that's one thing, you know, exercise.
I agree. And also, you know, it's of course carbohydrates themselves. It's not about, particularly for, you know, my followers, it's not about cutting out all carbs and just going on a super intense keto diet. But when you're going to have carbs, there are things that you can do to make sure they don't affect you that badly. And one of the main things you can do is actually, you know, use your muscles afterwards or before, so that your body, as it gets this massive dump of sugar in the bloodstream, it sends the sugar to your muscles that need it to work out, instead of just letting it, you know, float around in your blood and potentially cause harmful side effects. So exercise is such an incredible tool.
Yeah. Let's talk about some other little hacks that we can implement, such as, I know you did, I think you've done a couple of posts on apple cider vinegar.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I should be sponsored by the Bragg's apple cider vinegar brand, because like the number of people who bought it. So there's no silver bullet in terms of how you can eat to feel better and be healthier. You know, it's a daily process, and every day you have to make sure that you reduce the amount of sugar you eat and try to eat more balanced. However, apple cider vinegar, in my experience and in the scientific literature, appears to be the only silver bullet, maybe with exercise actually. So apple cider vinegar is this like magical thing that, if you have just a tablespoon of it, you know, in a glass of water before you have a meal, will significantly reduce the speed at which the sugar in the meal will get dumped into your bloodstream. So it'll completely flatten any potential glucose curve from what you just ate. And it's amazing. And it works every time. And it works instantly. So there's really no reason to not drink apple cider vinegar. The taste is a little weird, but personally, I just feel like it's required, and then you get used to it. And now I just crave it even outside of meals. And the way it works is really interesting. Scientists think that when you eat apple cider vinegar, it reduces the space or the sort of the width of the hole between your stomach and your intestine, therefore slowing down the speed at which the food in your stomach passes through your gut and goes into your blood. Have you tried it?
Yeah, I've experimented with apple cider vinegar a few times. And I was looking into the actual mechanism, like I'm trying to understand like how does it exert such a potent effect on dropping the blood sugar? And I was trying to investigate some of the mechanisms. And what I noticed was actually that it shared a lot of the same mechanisms as like bitter melon, as cinnamon, and it actually, it does delay that glucose release. But another, like a different pathway to stabilize that blood sugar is actually to inhibit the absorption in the small intestine. So it's inhibiting that enzyme alpha glucosidase, I think it is, which is, and that's like a typical mechanism. And even if you look at like metformin, which is the anti-diabetic drug, it actually shares a similar effect as well, which is quite interesting.
Wow. Interesting. I'll have to look into that. That's really cool. And you know, you mentioned cinnamon, and what I've seen in the studies is that cinnamon works if it's taken over time.
Yeah.
You have to sort of build it up in your system. So if you just say, oh, I'm going to have a piece of chocolate, let me sprinkle some cinnamon on that, it's not going to change anything. You have to be diligently taking it for weeks, I believe, until it has an effect, whereas apple cider vinegar just works the first time, you know?
Yeah.
You know a lot about cinnamon. Tell us a bit more.
About cinnamon? Yeah. Yeah. I just did a post today on cinnamon, actually. In terms of its mechanism, there's actually one metabolite, the sodium benzoate, and they actually believe that interacts with the microbiome to alter some of the gut bacteria. And if you have a look again, if you look at some of the adaptogenic herbs, a lot of them actually increase the growth of Akkermansia. And Akkermansia is actually a very pro-longevity, pro-metabolic health. And in fact, you can even take Akkermansia to support. They're doing studies on exogenous Akkermansia as a bacteria to improve metabolic health, which I find really interesting. But actually, one thing I wanted to discuss was biotin. Are you familiar with biotin, vitamin B7?
No.
Well, actually, in some studies, they use really high dose of biotin, like 10 to 15 milligrams in type 1 diabetics. And in fact, it significantly reduced their requirements for insulin.
Really?
So, yeah. And I'd be curious to see, like, just in general with yourself, like just getting some regular biotin and just doing some experiments with like really high dose. It's definitely safe. Like I've seen the studies, it's fine. It's a,
please only tell me to do safe stuff.
Yeah, it's fine. You won't grow another arm.
Okay, well, send me the link and I'll get it and I'll test it.
Yeah, definitely with the biotin. So what about, let's look at some of the other factors that have really wrecked your sugar sensitivity. Like what about sleep? Like how has sleep impacted your glucose?
That's a great question. Sleep and glucose levels have this sort of a symbiotic relationship. So when I go to bed with high glucose levels and my glucose curve is like a sort of like a roller coaster throughout the night, I sleep poorly. And then when I wake up and I've slept poorly, inside of my body, the systems that are in charge of regulating my sugar levels, they're sleepy. They're like not doing very well. So after a poor night's sleep, if I eat something that's high in sugar, it's going to spike my glucose levels way more than if I had eaten it after a really good night's sleep. So what I do to try and counteract this is if I ever wake up feeling super tired, the first thing I'll do in the morning is I'll go and work out. I mean, even like a 20-minute, you know, small interval training session will bring my glucose sensitivity back to where it's supposed to be, so that during the day I don't start off with a big roller coaster and then more cravings and then more spikes and more drops. Because that's the issue. You know, when you wake up and you feel poorly, I often want to reach for something sweet just because I'm tired and that's what my brain is craving. But if I've slept poorly, that sweet thing is going to impact my body in a way worse way than if I had slept well. So it's going to start me off with a roller coaster, which will make me have a pretty bad day. So yeah, exercise is my tool after a poor night's sleep.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, definitely. Like if I've had a late night, the first thing I'll do is I make sure that my first meal is very high protein, very high fat, and a little bit of veggies. And then I actually tend to carb backload. I just run experiments on myself all the time. So I'm not a good candidate for this sort of stuff because I'm literally just, there's so many variables all at once. I'm just experimenting all the time. But I have been playing around with carb backloading, and what I do there, and I've been posting on my story that some days I hit like 450 grams of carbs, no issues. And in that case, I'll start to refeed the carbs after 2 p.m., like 2 or 3 p.m., and then cut off at like 8 o'clock. Oh. So there's two main meals that I get majority of my carbs in. And I make sure that like all the way up until like 2 p.m. I'm in like fat burning. Like,
how do you get 450 grams of carbs? Like, what do you eat?
Yeah, well,
that's impressive.
I split it up sometimes. Like, I'll do frequent meals after 2 p.m. So I might do like, I do have quite a lot of muesli bars, oat based ones, because I can digest them fine. I used to struggle, but now they're fine. And I think the fact that I'm on the treadmill, like I can really easily shuttle it. Like I'm able to uptake it fine. It doesn't affect I don't get the slumps.
Wow.
Which is really cool. Like I'm literally working and walking at the same time. It's so easy. So yeah, just doing those sort of experiments.
Nice.
Yeah. What about, I'm curious to know if you've ever tracked it after like a cold shower.
If I got a what after a cold shower, sorry?
Have you ever tracked your glucose after a cold shower?
No, I mean, most of my showers are a little cold, so I haven't specifically like looked into that, but I have seen that when I go in a sauna, My glucose levels shoot through the roof. And at the beginning, I was concerned. It turns out that it's just that the sensor doesn't deal with heat very well.
Oh, really?
So I think the heat just kind of messes it up. So those values seem to not be real. But no, not after a cold shower. Why?
Yeah, because I would have thought that based on, you know, the initial hormonal response following a cold shower, the body releases like norepinephrine, and norepinephrine can stimulate, like, and adrenaline can stimulate glucose, glycogen breakdown. So I'd imagine that it might lead to a glucose spike. But it's interesting how you said that sauna use actually, you know, one of the mechanisms by which sauna is actually like beneficial is that it raises growth hormone. And now growth hormone's actually been known to, dampen the body's insulin sensitivity, which is quite interesting. What did Vishy Go asked a question? Any other solutions apart from Lifestyle Libre, which you have experience with?
Sorry, the question is, any other sensors than the Freestyle Libre?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the sensor thing is kind of a hassle. I use the Libre because it's the cheapest. It's also the prettiest. You know, science should be stylish. So, unfortunately, in the US, you need a prescription for it. In Paris, where I get mine, you just can walk into a pharmacy and buy them. So this is the best solution I have found for now. But the hardware piece and finding a sensor that's affordable and easy to get without a prescription, we're just not there yet. Yeah. It's really not great. We're going to have to wait.
I'm in talks with a company from the States, NutriSense.io. I've for Vishy listening in, I'll link you that company later on.
I'm familiar with them. They're awesome. We know each other. Yeah. So yeah, what good. They do is they, you know, they get your prescription and they ship you the sensors. But it's not as easy as just walking into a pharmacy and buying them yourself. So there's a lot of cost that needs to be dealt with in order to get the prescription. So it's not yet super affordable, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jesse, before you even started like with this, you know, monitoring your glucose, did you have any like, I guess, any degree of like insulin resistance at all?
No. I mean, I was super metabolically healthy. I guess the main issues that I would complain about were this brain fog that I didn't know where it came from. My skin wasn't great. I didn't understand how to have a good night's sleep. And I always felt guilty when I ate spaghetti or cookies because I didn't realize how to do it in a way that wasn't bad for me. So metabolically, I was fine, but I had other issues that I really wanted to be able to solve. And I was just fascinated by this idea of being able to connect with my body and being able to speak with my body. You know, since my accident when I was 19, that's been my journey. My journey has been, how can I possibly understand how this amazing machine works? You know, I sort of liken it to, okay, let's do this, Nick. So Lucas, when was the last time you took a plane? Where'd you go?
Geez, last time I was on an airplane would have been to the Northern Territory, so up north of Australia.
Okay. So when you walked into the plane, before you turned right, you know, you kind of maybe glanced at the cockpit. And I often do this. And when I look at the cockpit, I'm like, oh my God, buttons, levers, screens, that shit looks complicated. And I'm just happy that the pilots know what they're doing. And I walk away and go to my seat, right? The thing is, as a human, if you want to take the analogy, if our body is the plane, you know, like this whole thing is the plane, we're not only the passenger in the back that's just hoping everything will go well, but we're also the pilot. Like we have to not only make decisions to figure out how to navigate this thing, but we also bear all of the consequences. So to me, this whole mystery of how my body works was almost put to rest when I heard about glucose and I understood glucose, because I realized if I'm in the cockpit of my body, the most important lever I can understand is glucose, because I can affect it instantly with everything I eat and do. And it literally has ramifications on every part of my physical and mental health. So to me, glucose was just like this very clear thing that I heard about and learned about. And it became very obvious that it was super important to make sure I knew how it worked. in order to navigate my body as best as possible.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, was there a, did you ever get tempted to want to measure your blood ketones at all?
So I used to be keto. I would say 4 years ago, I really got into keto. And so I would do the sticks on which you pee, you know, but that was the only thing I did.
Yeah.
And for me, keto was really tough. My period stopped. I just felt really strange. It didn't work for me.
Yeah.
It didn't work for me. Yeah. I feel like it works better for men. I don't know if that's your experience as well.
I've never undergone like strict keto. I don't think I ever will, personally. I need my carbs to feel good. Like it's just a plain fact from like a hormonal perspective, from a training point of view, like, yeah, if I cut back on the carbs, then yeah, my body goes to shit, to be honest. So it is important. It is important. Even from like I get my thyroid checked frequently. I always do like blood tests for thyroid. Not that I have any issues with it, but I'm always trying to max it out. Like I'm always trying to get it as optimal as possible.
You're and
I
such noticed, an like, optimizer. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's like in terms of like the glucose intake, that does affect, you know, that active form of thyroid, that T3, and even body temperature as well. That's a really good marker. I'm sure like a lot of people that are on keto would probably likely experience issues with thyroid and general body temperature, inability to tolerate cold, like so important.
Makes sense.
So what about I know you would have had a lot of attention from a lot of like women struggling, I guess, with PCOS. So have you had a look at the link there between like, you know, blood sugar stability or regulation and PCOS?
Yeah, I have. And it's really interesting. So PCOS, from what I can glean from the studies, is a condition in which you have, you know, overactive or higher than normal levels of sex hormones in your body, which leads to a lot of symptoms. And when your blood sugar levels are too high and too deregulated, your body can't flush these sex hormones properly. And so one of the main things that I've noticed have been really effective in women with PCOS is to stabilize your blood sugar levels. Because by stabilizing your blood sugar levels, you stabilize your insulin levels. And that is really the key in helping your body flush these excess hormones as much as possible. So, I mean, every week I discover new conditions that are linked to glucose levels. It really seems like it's an incredibly important thing to do for everything from, you know, acne to weight gain to PCOS to heart disease prevention. It's just like, it's really important.
Yeah. And even to a particular virus that's around the world right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just key. It really is. There's no upside in having high or variable sugar levels. It's just not beneficial at all.
What about, I know you mentioned insulin. I'm glad you brought that up. Have you ever personally measured your like fasting insulin at all?
No, but I want to. And there's this cool company called Meterbolic, and they're working on a finger prick insulin test that you can do at home.
Wow.
So I'm definitely keen to try that out. How about you?
Geez, that sounds really cool. I'd love to.
I'll send you the link. Really cool. Sweet. They're still really early. They're actually, I think they're looking for beta testers in their first cohort. I'll send you all the info because it's really interesting.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, I've checked my fasting insulin twice. The first time I was sitting at just 5. So I think the most ideal range for like a healthy individual is like 2 to 5. So I was sitting on 5. I don't really have any symptoms of like, you know, insulin resistance or anything. I don't want to get too like orthorexic about it. But no, it's fine, but it's definitely a marker that I think a lot of people should be looking into if they have energy issues, like hormonal issues, brain fog, depression, anxiety. Yeah.
And in fact, you know, glucose is not everything. And if we were able to measure insulin continuously instead of glucose, it would be way better, way better. Because your glucose can be low, but your insulin can be high. And in fact, when you're developing a metabolic disorder, the first thing that starts increasing is insulin before your glucose starts increasing. So I just hope that one day we'll have continuous insulin monitors, because that would be the holy grail. That would be so much better.
Yeah, a CIM device. So let's give our listeners some really practical tips that they can apply, I guess, like right now, in terms of like just stabilizing blood sugar. So do you want to give maybe like your top three tips?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Tip number one, never eat carbs naked. So what I mean by that is that when you're having starches or sugars, never eat them on their own. Always have them with a little bit of protein, a little bit of fat, or a little bit of fiber. Anytime you can combine carbs with something else, you will reduce the speed at which the glucose in the carbs will hit your bloodstream. So example, if you're going to have a piece of fruit or a cookie, add a few almonds before that fruit or that cookie. If you're going to have a piece of bread, add a little bit of cheese to it, or like a slice of avocado, right? So never have carbs naked. That's the number one tip. Second tip that's super easy and amazing is when you're having a meal or you're looking at something on your plate, always eat the carbs last. And it's kind of related to the concept I just mentioned. What you want to do is you want to avoid the carbs hitting your stomach first. You want to sort of like make a little bed of fiber and protein and fat in your stomach before the carbs come in. So on your plate, you know, if you have, I don't know, salad and some protein and some carbs, start with the salad, then the protein, and then the carbs. That'll really help reduce the spike. And studies have shown that just changing the order of the foods that you eat without changing the composition of the meal at all can reduce your glucose spikes by 30%. It's awesome. Crazy. That's like metformin level stuff. Yeah. It's amazing. And then the third one would be, I mean, it's probably my favorite. It's the apple cider vinegar trick. So buy a bottle of apple cider vinegar. My aunt did this really cute thing. She got this tiny little flask that's usually for alcohol, and she puts like 3 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar in it, and she carries it around with her all day. So when you know you're going to have something high in carbs, put a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in a glass of water and just drink that before you have the carbs. That way you know that you're helping your body process the carbs in a better way, and you're sort of helping avoid this very, very bad side effect of eating a lot of sugar by flattening the curve.
Yeah, that's so good. They're all tips that I apply myself, like just intuitively, or, you know, I apply all of them. They're really good.
Totally.
One of them, actually, one I'd be curious to know more about is actually, I don't know if there's any research conducted on chewing rate, like how many chews, you know, like, 'cause a lot of people tend to just waft their food down. I'd imagine that would significantly affect, you know, the glucose.
That's interesting. I'll have to look at that. But like, if we think about it, if we take an extreme, you know, if you're having ice cream and if you gobble the whole ice cream scoop down in a second versus you spread it out over like 6 hours, obviously the 6 hour one is going to have a slower spike because the glucose is going to hit your body at a slower rate. So then if you compare like a 5 minute eating to a 20 minute eating, I'm sure you see some of that same effect. So yeah, probably. I think we can hypothesize that eating more slowly will help you curb a glucose spike from a meal.
Mm. Yeah. Another thing that came to my mind was actually, I wonder if, 'cause I'm a huge fan of salt. I don't know about you, but I love my salt. Like, I salt pretty much everything. Like, I'm a salt fiend. But I'd be curious to know whether, because I know Dr. James DiNicolantonio, he talks about how salt's incredibly important for generating stomach acid and reducing adrenaline and helping with insulin uptake and things like that. So I'd be curious to know whether or not, you know, salt would have an effect on glucose release or anything like that.
That's a good question. I don't know. We'd have to look into that.
Mm. So what do you do with all the, I'd imagine you get a lot of DMs, a lot of messages asking for experiments and things like that. So how do you go about, I guess, like organizing and curating them?
Well, I make a list of all of the things. I get a lot of DMs. I get a lot of requests, and they're amazing. And I hope people keep sending them to me, but I just organize them, and then I just go with the most interesting one first, and I just keep going. It's like an infinite amount of things to test. Often when people ask me, hey, have you tested this? I can point them to an older test that is a little bit equivalent to their response, or maybe there's a study I can show that says it doesn't work, or I try to give people an answer. And if I don't have an answer right away about what a particular food would do to glucose, I try to test it as soon as possible, but it is hard. And the cool thing is I actually now, you know, it's not just me anymore. So there's a whole community of people who are testing foods, wearing glucose monitor and sharing the results. So a lot of the posts that I post now, and it's incredible, are actually made by the community. So if you look at the descriptions, you know, I'll say this post was done by a keto tester, by Frida, you know. So there's more and more people doing it. And I really just want my profile to be a place where we can assemble all this information and give it to people. So the more people join in, the better. The community is always growing, and I'm so excited about it. It's really cool. Mm.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's really fun. It's like when I first found your profile and I was like looking at the graphics, they're just really, they're fun to look at and observe. And I'm sure like it's really had a profound effect on just people's awareness, I guess. Like you're really just, that's what you're doing. You're doing a really good job at that.
Thank you.
You're helping people understand their biology a lot better, which is, you know, it's really important. It's fundamental to, as we've already mentioned, you know, metabolic health and disease, immune health, depression, anxiety, hormonal health. It's really good.
Thanks, Lucas. Well, yeah, it's been amazing. And I'm super thrilled to be able to share this knowledge. And, you know, I'm not inventing anything. Like I'm just using, I'm just illustrating the science that already exists. And I just think it's such an important topic. And I'm so thrilled that people are interested. And I want to keep going. You know, I want everybody on the world to know about this and understand that with the food they eat, they can have a profound impact on how they feel. And it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be extreme. It's just about learning a few things about how your glucose levels work.
Yeah. Cool. So we've got some really practical tips for our listeners. Maybe even, have you thought about maybe like offering a voting system where like you can, you know, poll people and ask them what they want to see you? Because that's what I'm saying. Like you're getting so many requests. Maybe, yeah, setting up like a poll system.
That's a really good idea. Yeah. Currently what I do is sometimes I just post a story asking people for what test they want to see next, but the voting thing is super brilliant. Yeah, I could totally do that. I like that idea a lot. Like an upvote, you could upvote and downvote particular tests.
Yeah, great idea. That'd work well. Cool. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much, we've gotten through most of what I wanted to cover. The focus I wanted to spend our time on was the understanding the differences in how you feel during a hypoglycemic episode versus like a hyper state, because I know a lot of those, there's a lot of crossover in terms of the symptoms, you know, with a hyper and hypo state. But I definitely think our listeners have you know, learnt a lot, and they're going to continue learning through your experiments and all the stuff that you're doing, which is really, really awesome.
Thanks for your support, Lucas. It's so amazing. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Alrighty. So Jesse, for those who want to like learn more about you, do you have any other like platforms that you're on? I know you're pretty big on like Twitter. Anywhere else?
No, you know, Instagram is really the place. I mean, if people want to know more about like me as a person, I mean, they can message me. I'm not that interesting. Like I think the content and what I share is really what's important. I share all my posts to a Facebook page, but I really haven't done anything with it. So Instagram is the place right now. Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to be doing more and more podcasts. Just look out for podcasts and then stay on the Instagram, and lots of exciting things are coming soon, and they'll all be announced on the Instagram.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining in, Jesse. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you everyone for joining in to today's episode. For in-depth show notes and lessons learned, visit nofilter.media/boostyourbiology.
This has been a No Filter Media production.
Say what you want. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.